with a high of 41. Sunday, chance of rain, a high of 43. Monday, off and on rain, a high of 45. Right now, kind of windy. Wind west 16, gusting to 32. 5 degrees Kenosha, 3 degrees in Racine. Wind chill is minus 15. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I'm so happy that today is the day that we welcome Kaylin Palomares back on the Morning Show for her monthly visit to the program. Kaylin, of course, has been with us quite a number of times. We remember back in the days when she was on the staff for Hawthorne Hollow. She is now on the staff of Racine County, and specifically the Racine County Land and Water Conservation Division. And towards that end, she is bringing two of her workmates with her today, two of her colleagues, to talk about the work that they do on a daily basis on behalf of the citizens of Racine County. And we have with us in the studios Chad Sampson, who is Land Resources Manager, and John Grove, Conservation Specialist. And they work closely with Kaylin Palomares, who is Conservation Planner for Racine County. And we have a lot to explore, including that much bandied about term conservation. What exactly does it mean, and what does it mean in terms of the important work that Kaylin and her colleagues do on a daily basis? So I'm excited about this program. And Kaylin Palomares and Chad Sampson and John Grove, we welcome all of you to the Morning Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning.
So Kaylin, I'm curious to know what, if anything, kind of prompted you to want to do this. Is there a particular maybe kind of misunderstanding out there that you feel like you want to address, or just some other way in which you thought it made sense to have a conversation about this?
A little bit. So you could call it low-hanging fruit, since I'm with these guys every day. So I definitely, since I started with Racine County, I knew I was going to have these guys on at some point. And with the holidays and everything, I just figured it'd be nice to just do something that's known to me and I'm comfortable with. I do definitely want to just talk about conservation as a whole, because I think that even as I came into this position and before this position, I didn't have a full understanding of what conservation fully meant. And so now that I've been in it for 6 months now and been working with these guys, I can understand it a lot better. So I think that it's something that I wouldn't say is misunderstood, but something that is very broad, and so people don't know all the small parts of it.
Absolutely, and so this is a conversation maybe designed to bring some clarity and maybe a sense of the tangible in terms of what this is all about. I'm excited to learn a little more about the colleagues that you've brought with you, and I'm curious, first of all, how long have you been working together? How long have you been colleagues with Racine County?
Well, as long as John's been there, so that's 17 years, John?
Yep, a little over 17.
So I've been at Racine County for 26 years, and John joined the staff in 2007, and Kaylin recently is 6 months ago. And it's been a good effort over the years. John and I have gained a lot of positive relationships with citizens of Racine County, public officials, agency partners, and other colleagues that are in the same role of protecting the environment. And with that positive relationship, you can get a lot accomplished, and we've done a lot. And Kaylin's jumped on board, and she's hit the ground running. So this is one of the things that we said that, yeah, let's keep this thing going. Let's keep the radio show going, Kaylin, and she did. So
fantastic. So this is Chad Sampson we were just hearing from. Let's hear a little bit about where you're from originally. Are you originally from Racine? And tell us a little bit about what was of interest to you, you know, early in your life, and what ultimately led you to wanna do this for a living?
So yeah, I actually grew up in the Fond du Lac area, and then I lived in the Madison area. I went to Platteville for college, and ended up in Racine County just as my first job. I went to Platteville. I was going to be maybe a civil engineer. Gears kind of changed while I was there, and I went into more of an environmental sciences type of course, which was it was called reclamation, but it was basically a combination of agriculture, engineering, and science all into kind of one major. And so my first job out of college was with the Natural Resources Conservation Service in Iowa County, but it was a part-time, limited-term employment. And then I was posting or applying for positions in Racine County came open, and I've been there since 1998.
Wow. That course that you took that was kind of an interesting interdisciplinary experience, was that just kind of a happy accident that you took that, or were you feeling a tug towards exploring something like that?
When I was switching my major, there was kind of two ways to go. One was industrial technology, which was kind of working in a factory maybe the rest of my life, or the other one was being outdoors and maybe improving the environment, and that's the gear that I chose was to have an outdoor career. And then I found a class called Soil and Water Conservation in college, and we went on a field trip or a tour with one of the members that was doing this kind of work, and I said, that's what I want to do for a living, and that's when I made my decision.
Very good. How about you, John Grove? Tell us where you're from originally and the kind of things that ultimately led you to this position that you occupy now with Racine County.
Yes, I grew up in Caledonia, and I actually went to Shoreland Lutheran right here in Summers for high school, and then I ended up going to UW-Parkside here for 4 years. I guess I majored in environmental geography with an emphasis on I had urban planning and also GIS, which is Geographic Information Systems. I got my certificate, and I didn't know what I wanted to do up until like the last, very last minute to declare my major. So, but one of the main courses that I took that kind of steered me towards the environmental direction was soils class. That kind of opened my eyes on, you know, soil is a living structure, not just dirt. So in my last year at Parkside, I interned at Racine County, and right at that time, at the end of my internship, is when Chad's predecessor retired, and Chad moved into land resources manager, and my position became open, and I applied with a few other applicants and got the job. So I've been there ever since.
History was made. Yep. So very good. And at least two-thirds of the team that's with us today was formed. For those of you just joining us on today's morning show, the Thursday morning show, Kaylin Palomares, a monthly visitor to the program, has brought her two colleagues from work at the Racine County Land and Water Conservation Division. So John Grove, who we were just hearing from, conservation specialist, and Chad Sampson, land resources manager. So Kaylin, maybe we could get from you kind of an umbrella term about the Racine County Land and Water Conservation Division, what sort of your chief charter is. I mean, what is it? What is at the heart and soul of what all of you do?
Well, our answers might all be different, because we all kind of we all each have a piece that we kind of fill.
Yeah.
But to me, the division as a whole kind of provides support and education to the public, to landowners, to farmers about conservation, and helping those people find funding or other resources to implement conservation practices on their land, or just to learn the importance of it and why we're kind of pushing for that. But we each kind of fill in different areas. So like my area, I do a lot more of like the shoreline restoration type of things, and erosion on shorelines, and then the education component. John really does a lot of our kind of engineering mapping and agricultural stuff, and then Chad is like, he's the boss and he does all of it. And he definitely can, you know, have his hands in any of those areas too. So but it's broad, and there's even more to it than me explaining it right now. So.
Right. One of the things you had said is that it would be good for us to kind of explore this whole matter of conservation. and the way in which that term tends to get used just kind of by regular people in our regular lives versus what you folks are working on and sort of what your charter is. So, Chad, since you're the boss, why don't we begin with you, and let's the others can join in as they see fit. How do you see that term of conservation, and particularly in terms of what the what you folks do at Racine County?
So there's really two things that we look at when we're talking about conservation. One is the water quality that we bring to the table. So when you have soil erosion or you have livestock waste that's not being managed properly, it can get into your surface waters, your lakes, your rivers, your streams, which causes problems, everything from E. coli to high nitrates, which leads to algae blooms, which leads to poor water quality. Possibly even your drinking water could have poor water quality. So water is the first thing we really look at to keep contaminants out of the water systems. Secondly, if we have any soil that is exposed, so it's not covered in a grass or trees or a wooded area, that soil is probably regulated by Racine County and by the DNR to not be allowed to run off into those water bodies. So agricultural land, obviously a lot of exposed soil that's basically regulated really by Racine County. Also, if you have a construction site that has exposed soil, that is also looked at through regulations through Racine County. The way that works is that we have different methods of farming to prevent soil erosion from occurring. John is kind of our engineering technical expert for putting in grass swales, grass buffers, water and sediment control basins, things that are out in the farm fields preventing that soil from going into your streams and your lakes and whatnot. And finally, the construction site erosion, there's different parameters that are used on construction sites to keep the soil from eroding again into those waterways, whether that's a silt fence or other barriers like erosion control blankets and whatnot. Depending on the site, things are required to prevent that soil from coming off that site, you know, into our roadways and into that storm grate, which is a storm sewer that leads to a lake or a river. We don't want that to happen. So we have these items put in place for a potential site for a new construction for a home, an addition on a home or something like that. So we help with those regulations as well.
So what would be the most serious consequences if the work you did was not done and if that runoff was allowed to just continue completely unabated? What kinds of contaminants are we talking about? I mean, what exactly is in the soil that we don't want into our waters?
So the elements in the soil that we don't want in our waters include phosphorus, nitrates. Those are the two big ones in the waterways. The phosphorus levels in a healthy lake are supposed to be below 0.1 milligrams per liter. And in a lot of lakes in Racine County, it's above that level. If you're above that level, what that means is that the algae blooms, weed growth in the lakes become more severe. And so now the runoff that's getting into these lakes is causing larger algae blooms, more weed growth, things that your boaters, your recreational people in the waters, swimmers, do not want to see in their waterways. So what we're trying to do is prevent that from occurring. So if there's a subdivision being built right along the edge of a lake, we make sure that the soil from that subdivision is not going to be eroding into that lake, because that's just going to enhance an already existing problem within a lake.
So, Kaylin, this is a big part of what you do then, is that right?
Yeah. We go on site visits to these construction sites, and we look at kind of what the area looks like, the topography, if it's within a floodplain, if there's any wetlands nearby, and we kind of look at all of those factors, and we have to create a plan for the contractor, for the homeowner, or for whoever it is, to put practices in place before they start building so that they don't have erosion or they don't have these elements going into the waterways, whether it's a ditch or a river or whatever it is. And I also wanted to mention too, you know, Chad said nitrates and phosphorus, but it's also the soil itself, the sediment itself, that can be harmful to the waterways. it creates kind of this cloudiness, and you may have seen it like after a big rain, and you see the river that's going into, you know, Lake Michigan, you just see this big plume of sediment. And that can affect like the dissolved oxygen within the water. It affects, you know, what creatures can live in that water, because there's just, imagine that the air is smoky. It's kind of like that, but for the animals that live in the water. So
Wow. And are we talking about just about any sort of construction? I mean, even something of a fairly modest scale still needs to have this kind of care taken?
So there's different limits to how far away from a water body these projects take place. So if you're in the middle of nowhere and there's no water bodies around you and you're not within a floodplain, then it's, as far as I know, we don't really touch it. But if it's within, I think, 1,000 feet of a waterway.
The shoreline zoning rules is within 1,000 feet of a lake or 300 feet of a navigable stream. And that's when Kaylin gets a copy of a construction plan in the unincorporated areas of Racine County to go take a look at what is being done. And then she makes the recommendations and or requirements to that site for erosion control.
Right. And we're talking about this existing in, I assume, every county in Wisconsin. I mean, this is something that happens throughout the state. Does this also happen in other states in exactly the same way? Or are we talking about something very specific to Wisconsin?
No, there's similar rules across the United States. So basically what happens is the EPA, or Environmental Protection Agency, kind of dictates what the federal rules are. Those federal rules get pushed to the state level. In our case, the state level is the Wisconsin DNR and the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And then those rules get put onto the counties, which can be put into ordinances. So it's not just Racine County that has these rules. They're prevalent everywhere throughout the country. It's just that how are they being run by each municipality is probably the difference.
We're talking today on the morning show with Kaylin Palomares and two of her colleagues from Racine County Land and Water Conservation Division. You've been just hearing from Chad Sampson, who was Land Resources Manager. John Grove is Conservation Specialist. So, John, tell us more about specifically what your responsibilities are.
I guess sometimes, usually we get phone calls from farmers or rural landowners. They say, hey, I have an erosion issue. Can you come out there and take a look at it? So that's when we do a site visit. We go out there and identify the problem, identify the resource issue. And then usually I'm the one, or Kayla and I, we're the ones that go out there and survey the site with the survey-grade GPS that we have in-house. Then we take those GPS points back and formulate a plan according to state standards and specifications for those particular practices that we're going to work on or going to install. I have the engineering background that I've gained throughout the last 17 years. A lot of training went into that. And then we'll take that plan and present it to the landowner, and also figure out which grant programs we can utilize to help pay for that. That's always the biggest question, the biggest concern, is how much is this project going to cost? And then we take the plan and we send it out for bids. And then we get those bids back. And I guess that year, the following year, we move to construction. So then I'm out there surveying, making sure that project is being installed according to standards and specs and according to the plan. So that the landowner can get reimbursed, so that we can get reimbursed from the state or other, grant opportunities. And then that's after that, then you sign off on the project and it's done.
So a couple of things surprised me. One of them is that the impetus for this, if I understand you correctly, usually comes from the landowner.
Yep.
I mean, they are calling you up. You're not going around inspecting and pointing out erosion problems to somebody. It's going to be a farmer or other landowner that will notice this.
Yeah, we don't have issues trying to get too much work. I mean, people come to us and we don't have to do too much. So
right.
We have waiting lists for some of our projects. There's waiting lists for years out for these projects to be done, because that's how many people really need our support and want the financial assistance, or they want the technical assistance. So it's busy.
So I'm curious, when a landowner calls you and they are seeing this, what is typically at the heart of their concern? I mean, what are they worried about, or why is this, as far as they're concerned, a problem in which they need help?
Well, I can say from a shoreline perspective, usually it's they're losing their yard. Their yard is falling into the river or the lake or whatever water body they're on. And they're losing their yard, and it's dangerous, and there's holes, and so they're tripping on it, and they're falling in, and all those types of things. So usually that's the base of the concern that that I deal with. I can guess that for John and for farmers, it's normally they're losing their topsoil.
Mm.
So the farmers, they want the topsoil on their farms because that's the best part. That's what's growing their food. That's what's giving their food the nutrients. That's what they want. They don't want the clay. They don't want the rock. But that topsoil is easily washed away, and so if it's eroding away at a fast rate, then they're going to be really concerned, because it takes a really long time to rebuild that topsoil and to get soil back to that condition.
Right, we're talking about years and years and years.
Many years.
Right. Yeah, probably more years than the typical farmer is going to even be there. Right. So, what kind of practices are we talking then about in terms of things that can be constructed that would make a difference, and in layman's terms, if it's possible? I mean, what kinds of things end up getting designed or constructed?
Yeah, I can help answer that. So John is our main engineer designer for these practices. So just take example like your road ditch. It's a grass swale that conveys water safely from one point to another point. A lot of times in a farm field, you need the same thing. Instead of having a gully eroding through the field after every large rain event, which washes that soil down to the bottom of the field or to the nearest ditch or whatever, we design a grass swale. So it'd be just like a road ditch would look, grassy swale, but it's in the middle of a farm field to prevent that erosion from occurring on that area.
Hmm. I was just going to say, that's exactly the kind of thing that those of us who just drive on the roads won't even see. We wouldn't even know that those are there in the middle of those fields.
Correct. You go on a ride with myself or John for sure, and Kaylin even, and around the county, and you'll be like, well, we helped that farmer install that. We helped Farmer B install that. We helped Farmer Joe install that. And then you wouldn't even know it if you're just kind of unaware of what you're seeing when you're driving through the county, especially the agricultural portions of the county.
Yeah. So what has to be designed? I mean, what sort of things do you have to look at with a specific field, with a specific farm, with a specific situation in terms of doing this in just the right way? I guess I'm curious about the kind of engineering decisions that need to be made.
Yeah, I guess that's a little more technical, but, you know, you look at, first of all, the drainage area, you know, how many acres are draining down through that area or to that point. Then you have to look at what soil type is there. You know, does it erode? Is it highly erodible, or maybe it's not? Or the pitch, you know, the slope of the land. Then you formulate what is called the runoff, or the CFS of the water that's coming down through there. And that's ultimately what you're using to design the width and the depth of this grass waterway or grass swale, or any other project, where you're always looking at how much water is flowing down through that drainage area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to determine the size. Or
so are you usually coming up with one plan per situation, or are you offering them alternatives? I mean, is there usually one optimal right answer to a given problem?
Typically we do like we're going to throw the, you know, do everything, you know, if there's multiple issues, we're going to put all that on one plan, and usually tell me, hey, let's do it all. And sometimes, you know, landowners aren't very receptive, you know, well, you know, let's maybe start with this, and next year we'll do that. And suddenly you have, you know, reoccurring landowners that come back.
And I suppose ultimately it's their land, to at least some extent, it's their decision. I mean, are there regulations that, in a sense, compel a landowner to do certain things, or is this really up to them?
I would say one-third of our work is complaint-driven. So you might have a neighbor that's complaining about their neighbor that might be upstream. Their soil's eroding onto my property, causing flooding on my property, causing problems on my property. Somebody needs to do something here. So we get that phone call, and the first thing I say is, have you talked to your neighbor? And a lot of times that answer is no. So then we kind of coordinate a situation where we get everybody together and try to come up with a solution. And there might be more than one solution to that problem. It might be a grass swale, it might be a sediment basin, it might be a few different things. Maybe just don't crop this area, let's just leave it in grass, that might just solve the whole thing. So we work with those neighbors and work on those complaints. Instead of having a hard-handed approach to fixing this and doing conservation on the ground, we kind of have that soft-handed approach where we maybe find a good program, find some cost-share programs, have both neighbors be happy with the what the outcome is going to be, and work on it that way.
Huh. So this is a little more psychological than I would have guessed. I mean, that it isn't just facts and figures and this is what's going to happen, but you're sometimes trying to broker better relations between, for instance, two different farmers or two different property owners or something.
It's very people-based, which is another thing that was sort of surprising to me coming into this, but each person that you work with for any of these projects, whatever it is, has a different goal in mind. They have a different mindset going into it, and they have a different set of issues and reasons for those issues. And so what I've learned from these guys is, like, you learn to work with all these different types of people and kind of psychologically, like, figure out how to get to that place in their brain to, like, help shift, you know, either a mindset or just to get a, you know, get our facts across, but in a way that makes sense to them.
Right.
So communicating in a way that makes sense to these different types of people.
Right, right. So when you go in and do something, is that typically all that ever has to be done? Do these tend to be, at least for the most part, permanent solutions, or do circumstances tend to change, or does what you build sort of wear away at times? I mean, do we have situations now where you have to return and readdress a problem or a situation?
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of our situations where we build with a project with an owner, the project lasts, you know, 10 years, 15 years. It kind of depends on how they farm the land around it, the maintenance they've done while they've had the project. But then that person may come back 10 or 15 years later and say, hey, this isn't working like it used to when it was brand new that many years ago, because now the soil has eroded up to the edge of the grass and the water's not getting in the ditch anymore or the swale. We need to kind of, you know, fix that. So we do have the issue where we can go back out onto projects, and I've been there long enough where I've been back out on the same site a few times with the same landowner and just get things fixed back up the way they were when we originally designed and built the project.
Right. So yeah, I guess when you've been doing this for a quarter of a century, that's gonna happen. Absolutely. I'm curious, as you're working with especially farmers, but property owners of any kind, have you detected much in the way of change over these considerable years in terms of kind of the general level of awareness? It seems like this is something that we talk about more than we did maybe once upon a time. I mean, do you feel like you have to do a little less educating in terms of why this is important and so on, or generally speaking, are people still generally speaking in the dark about these kind of issues?
I think people that have a larger land base have seen or talked to neighbors or other farmers, seen what our offices help provide, and so I think the general knowledge is out there more than it was 25 years ago, and people know to call us, and that's why we have a waiting list for projects and a waiting list for funding. In general, the information is out there, and the people know where to go to receive what they need for their land.
Hmm. John, do you ever find yourself looking at situations in which there really is no solution? I mean, are there situations where it's just really severe circumstances that just can't be remedied in any way that you see, or is there always a solution for any of these kind of problems?
I guess, yes, there are some certain cases where it's like, whoa, this is way outside my expertise, or, you know, then yes, there are, we can go to the state level, or even, we said NRCS, you know, they have, professional engineers that can help, you know, maybe they have better experience on something like this. And there's been a few cases where it's like, yeah, this is eroding way beyond what, I mean, I might have an idea of, you know, what we could do, but I can't, you know, sign off on that or sign off on the plan or do something like that. But
so once in a while, if it's a really serious situation, it can actually be kind of passed on to upper echelons to see if they can address it.
Yep,
that's interesting. So we haven't yet talked about the whole matter of cost. So first of all, when something like this needs to be done on somebody's land, who does pay for it? And generally, how do they pay for it?
Well, there's a couple different ways that happens. So first of all, if they come to us, we try to put the best program available offer to that person. So sometimes a program might offer a 90% cost share. So if the project costs $10,000 for excavating, grading, whatever is done, the landowner only has to pay $1,000. Not all programs work like that. Some of them are 50%, some are 70%. Mm. Sometimes there is no cost share depending on what that person wants to do, but at least we can give them some guidance and provide some technical service for them to give them an idea what they need to do. So, and some people don't want to be part of a government program. Some people don't want to be tied to a cost share and have that commitment for 10 or 15 years to maintain whatever we're recommending they put in place. So, again, there's federal programs, state programs that are available. There's foundations that have grants that we can apply for. So there's a lot of opportunity for different funding sources. And again, kind of depending on the commitment that landowner has is how we kind of guide them towards what they're going to do. So again, maybe we'll have a $50,000 project with only 50% cost share, but that landowner sees the value and will spend that $25,000 out of their own pocket along with the cost share that might come from a federal program.
Wow. You mentioned that you have a waiting list, right? So is it simply a first come, first serve thing, or is it ever a matter where this looks really serious, we need to address this? How does this work in terms of what projects you take on versus the ones that get, in a sense, shunted to the waiting list to be addressed at some point?
I can say from my point of view, it kind of depends on the funding source, but also for my projects, for the shoreline specifically, they're kind of first come, first serve. So you get put on the list and you get a site visit when you reach out and we look at it and we make sure it's
eligible.
Thank you. Words. Mm-hmm. We make sure that it's eligible for the program, that it's in the right, you know, watershed, and that it's severe enough that it's worth, you know, applying for. And then when it's the year before their project year, then we reach back out, do another site visit, take measurements and the whole thing. So, but sometimes they're not eligible for one program, so then they get put on a list for a different program that maybe isn't as much of a cost share, but maybe that list is shorter, and they can get up sooner, but they only get a 50% cost share instead of a 90% cost share. So it really depends, but I do think that we've had some situations where we've moved people up because of the severity.
Yeah, I would say mostly the reason people move up is the squeaky wheel gets the grease, you know, so if somebody's calling us every week and wanting to get their project done, that does kind of push them up the list a little bit. Also, a more severe project would also rise up on the list as well. If something's very severe that we know needs to be fixed sooner than later, we will try to find some extra grant money from somewhere else or whatever just to get that project implemented. We don't want to see the waterways being polluted and whatnot. Obviously, get that taken care of sooner than later.
Right. Kaylin, I'm trying to imagine what you do in terms of shoreline. So we're often talking about, for instance, somebody who lives on a lake, and
yes,
they're losing their yard because the lake, in a sense, is encroaching on their land, on their yard.
But I think it's important just to mention that, so the county doesn't have jurisdiction over, like, Lake Michigan. So, like, any incorporated town, so, like, the village of Sturtevant, Mount Pleasant, city of Racine, they kind of all have their own people and their own ordinances for some of these things. We kind of deal with more of the unincorporated areas in Western Racine. So I'm out in Waterford, I'm on the Fox River, I'm on Eagle Lake, I'm on, you know, Wind Lake, all of those types of places.
Gotcha.
So we're talking lower energy areas compared to, like, you know, you see the shoreline on Lake Michigan falling in. That's not necessarily what we're doing.
Right, gotcha. That is good clarification. And I just realized it seems to me, so somebody might live on a lake, and if the waters are kind of encroaching, then that feels like a different kind of problem than when somebody lives on a river and that water is going someplace else. And so that feels like a more complicated situation, and also one in which there's, like, the harm is being spread or that harm is going someplace else. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, and it can be. So generally a river is going to be a bit higher energy of a project. So you're going to want a little bit of additional protection, maybe your riprap, so rock essentially that you're putting along the shoreline. You're going to want larger rocks so it's staying in place better.
Mm.
And you're going to need it to go potentially higher up a little bit than your natural shoreline. Have it go up like a foot past the ordinary high water mark, so that if you do get some wave action or something like that, or if the river is especially high, it's not just going to overtop your rock. Your rock is always going to be higher than the water level. Versus on a lake, usually you're really just dealing with, like, wave action from boats and things, but you're not really getting, like, that current from a river. So from what I've seen so far, it's not necessarily, you still kind of do the same type of design, same type of rock, but it's for a lower energy situation. So maybe the rock could be a little bit smaller, for instance. So and you're not going to get as much of the, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
Well, in Racine County, the rivers and the drainage ditches are more of a low flow, low energy situation. It's not like the Colorado River or something that you're
right.
that you're taking recreating on. This is more of a low energy system. The Waterford Dam on the Rochester Dam and the Echo Lake Dam in Burlington all kind of slow down that water flow. So the Fox River coming through Racine County is actually a very low flow situation due to all the dams slowing that water down and holding that water back for the riparian homeowners that recreate along those water bodies.
Right. I'm curious how much your work changes, declines, when we experience a couple of years of fairly serious drought. I mean, it just seems, just through my amateur eyes, that when we have drought, there's not as much water in the rivers. There doesn't seem to be as much water, period. And one would sort of assume then that a lot of what we're talking about then will not be serious. I mean, do you end up having sort of little to do during periods of drought, or does drought not affect the kind of issues that we're talking about?
I would almost say that it's the opposite effect. Drought,
really?
Drought brings about, you know, farmers are like, hey, let's get this done now while it's dry, because they know eventually the rains are going to come back and cause an issue. So
during periods of drought, that's when a lot of this conservation work is more effectively done.
Yes, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, we can get excavating, grading, bulldozers, equipment like that out onto the site when it's dry. Obviously, if it's too wet, you're just making a big muddy mess, and it's hard to do that kind of work. But if it's nice and dry, we actually get a lot more done during drier summers than we do during the wet years.
Interesting. So that's when you guys are maybe even especially busy. Wow.
Correct.
Interesting. So over the course of the years that you've been doing this, and again, you, John, came 17 years ago,
yep.
And Chad, 26 years ago. How much has changed over that time in terms of, first of all, kind of a general understanding of this, or by and large have the basic principles been in place for quite a long time? And then otherwise, are there changes in technology, for instance, that have changed the way maybe you assess situations and or address problems as they come up?
I would say that the general standards have somewhat remained the same for the last maybe 40, 50, 60 years. So you have to remember, our office really came about in the 1970s, but federally the the Dust Bowl of the 1930s was the thing that started erosion control offices at the federal level. The state got on board in the 1970s after the Clean Water Act was put in place, and then those standards were put in place for us to follow as people learned which standards and how well they work, and if they work well, keep them going, and if they don't work so well, make sure you make improvements to them. So I think overall things have stayed kind of the same. There's two trends that I would say that where things have been different. One is that we seem to have larger storm events when they happen, not just a nice 1-inch rain throughout the whole day. We seem to have 4 inches fall in like 1 hour, which changes the standard itself. Now we have to increase our 100-year storm event standard to a different engineering scale. So now we're looking at different numbers. So that grass swale that might have been 10 feet wide and 1 foot deep now needs to be 15 feet wide and 2 feet deep, because that 4 inches of rain over 1 hour, that's what that swale can handle, where that smaller swale couldn't handle that. So that's the difference, where our engineering standards are getting increased due to these larger, shorter storm events. The second thing that's changed is just farming practices overall. You guys had Jim Studion from the Watershed Protection Committee of Racine County over. We're trying to gear farmers into the no-tillage, cover crop, have a green plant growing on your field all year round type of situation to prevent erosion control or prevent erosion from happening, and hopefully not even needing some of these constructed conservation practices. So those are the two biggest things. I think the climate change and these weather events, as well as the gear towards regenerative farming or soil health farming, is the two things that I think will really impact the future.
John, how big a complication is this for you as the person who often is doing the actual designing?
Yeah, I mean, standards, specifications, they're always updating. So yeah, you always have to be on top of your game, always in training or listening to trainings. And I mean, it's kind of, you have to take some time throughout your day and look at standards and familiarize yourself with that. I guess one other thing I wanted to add is, I've been there for 17 years, but now you're starting to see the next generation come about, those landowners. And, some of them know that we exist, that we're there, but that's kind of, it throws in another wrench, so to speak. So.
Right. And are you so busy just with who needs help that you don't really have time to even see other places that have not contacted you yet? My question is, how well do you know Racine County and everything that's going on and maybe potential trouble spots that might emerge at some point? Kaylin is smiling.
I just want to make a comment that when I started here, we would go drive around just to familiarize me with that part of the county, because I'm from Sturtevant and I went to RUSD. Like, I've stayed kind of east of the interstate much of my life, so we'd go on little tours, little drives, and Chad and John both, they'd be like, oh yeah, this is so-and-so's property, we did this project in 2003, and this is so-and-so's property, and we did this, that, and the other, this is a wetland restoration that we did last year, and all these things. And it's like the whole count, and so these guys know the county, like they know pretty much, they know a lot of people. I won't say they know everyone, but they know a lot of people, they have relationships with a lot of people, and so that helps get things done. But we've also, when we're out, when I first started, we'd go out and be like, oh man, that field, I don't know who owns that one, I don't know who owns that doesn't look good, there's a big gully in that field, or that doesn't look very well. So I don't know that we have the ability to make a list of all these places that we see issues with and contact them and reach out to them at this point. Maybe in the future if we had more staff or something, more of the time. But it's something that we do notice while we're out, but it's just, prioritizing. And obviously if someone's willing and wants to get a project done, they're kind of the ones we want to focus on. So I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, I would say there's a few areas of the county that John and I are very familiar with that we know could use some conservation on the ground. In some cases, the funding just isn't there for what the landowner wants to do. Like, maybe it should be a wetland restoration. It's a floodplain that the farmer's tilling up this field and plowing this field every year, and you just, every time it rains and there's a large flood, all that soil might be going into the river, and you're thinking, man, we should just get this thing all in grass, maybe dig a couple ponds in there for a wetland restoration for some wildlife habitat and whatnot. But the the person's only being offered $10,000 to do this when it's going to cost $100,000 to put that, plus the farming income he's going to lose. So, he doesn't want to do that. So he just continues to farm it then. So now, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword there where we could really get in there and do some good, but we just got to find out where to get that funding to do that, to have that farmer be willing to do it. So,
yeah, interesting. So, and Racine County is big. I mean, a lot of us, you know, that we are mostly east of the interstate don't realize how far you drive, and all of that is Racine County, and so much of that is the purview of the important work that you do. Well, this has really been eye-opening to find out a lot about what is going on in terms of these conservation efforts throughout the county, and I applaud you for your diligence and the expertise that you bring to bear to these important situations. Chad Sampson, Land Resources Manager, and John Grove, Conservation Specialist for Racine County, for the Racine County Land and Water Conservation Division. It's been great to meet you today and to hear about the important work that you do, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kaylin, before we finish up, I know you want to tell us about a couple of things going on.
I do. So this is hot off the press, brand new news, okay?
Yeah.
So we've mentioned WPCR a couple times. So Dr. Jim Studi was on here a couple months ago to talk about their work. We work closely with them. That's the Watershed Protection Committee of Racine County. And we just finalized our date for the winter workshop. So they were going to have a speaker, Tom Cotter, there. He's a farmer, and he grazes, and he does cover crops, and he's from Minnesota. He's coming to speak. It should be a really great time. So save the date for February 10th. I'll bring this up again next month, but just so everyone has the date, that's going to be at the Cotton Exchange in Waterford.
Oh.
This Saturday is the annual wreath making workshop at Hawthorne Hollow, and they've dragged me into it. I will be I will be there teaching it on Saturday at 10 a.m. There's still a few tickets open for that. It's a $30 fee, so I hope to see some people there Saturday. Pringle Nature Center is doing a holiday gnome hunt through the rest of the month through December 31st. You could just go walk on your own, self-guided, and if you find a gnome, you win a prize from Pringle, so it's kind of fun thing to do with the family. And then finally, the Eco Justice Center, this Saturday is the last day that their gift shop is open. From 10 to 2, they have a bunch of awesome locally made, like from Eco Justice Center's land. They have jelly, syrup, honey, they have ornaments, they have things made of their alpaca fiber. So really awesome, and they'll be open from 10 to 2 on Saturday.
Very good. We have a couple of ornaments from there hanging on our tree proudly, so that's great to hear. Kaylin Palomares, thank you for making today's show possible. We look forward to seeing you in the Happy New Year.
Thanks, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we preview for you the upcoming Sing-Along Messiah at First United Methodist Church in Kenosha. That is coming up this Sunday evening at 6 p.m. We'll talk to Jessica DeBoer, who is the coordinator of the program. Also tomorrow, we'll be having a quick chat with Craig Gall, conductor of the Kenosha Pops Band. And they are reassembling, as they have done for the last 20-plus years, for a Christmas concert at Siebert Chapel. That's going to be taking place on Saturday evening. By the way, both of these events this weekend are free and open to the public. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Today is going to be sunny, breezy, and very cold with a high of just 13 degrees. Another very, very cold overnight with a low of 3 above. Tomorrow sunny and a bit more mild with a high of 26 degrees. Warmer still Saturday, Sunday, Monday with daytime highs in the low 40s. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.